When it's Chevy, it's Riverside.
With SRN News, I'm Jason Walker. It has been a wild ride today for America's 45th president. A New York judge presiding over Mr. Trump's hush money case has rescheduled that trial for April 15th, and a New York court has agreed to hold off collection of Trump's $450 million civil fraud judgment if he puts up a $175 million bond within 10 days. Mr. Trump says, okay. Russia launching a new series of missile attacks on the capital of Ukraine. There's reports of widespread destruction. United Nations Security Council has demanded a ceasefire in Gaza. The United States abstained on that resolution earlier today, which also demanded the release of all hostages taken when that war started. This is SRN News.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Are you a victim of the timeshare trap and think there's no way out? I'm Chuck McDowell, founder of Wesley Financial Group, the original timeshare cancellation expert. And I'm here to tell you that there is a way out. We've helped over 30,000 families out of financial hardship by getting them out of bad timeshares. If your timeshare agreement goes on forever, if you were told timeshares are a great investment, or your maintenance fees will never go up, you have questions, we have the answers. At Wesley Financial Group, we're dedicated to helping timeshare owners get out of their financial nightmare. All you need to do is give my office a call. I will send you a timeshare exit information kit absolutely free, explaining how the timeshare industry works and your options for cancellation.
Call now for your free timeshare exit information kit. 800-256-5533. That's 800-256-5533. 800-256-5533.
The Rich Thomas Weather Network, brought to you by Montgomery Paint and Body. From a little fender bender to total body repair, MPB will fix it good as new, maybe better. For over 35 years, the Turner family has been getting you back on the road. Call 279-7325.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. Weather changes on the way as the next storm system approaches. Today will be dry, though, and quite breezy. Mostly cloudy with a high temperature in the lower 70s. Wind advisory tonight. Winds gusting as high as 35 miles per hour. Dry through the evening hours, but scattered showers move in the overnight hours. Low 62. Showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. Locally heavy downpours. Tuesday's high 71. Wednesday's high 73. Upper 60s Thursday. Mostly sunny and warmer by the weekend. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
CBNS Bank has digital banking solutions to help you keep up. Check balances, pay bills, and much more. Learn more at cbsbank.com. Charges and fees may apply from your cellular service provider. Contact your service provider for information. Member FDIC.
1819 News.
Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen is reporting on changes made within Alabama's election systems. The report from Allen comes 1 year after he took office and removed the state of Alabama from the out-of-state ERIC system for managing voter rolls and implemented an in-state program called AVID. Allen spoke on News Talk 93.1 with host Joey Clark.
The Alabama Voter Integrity Database, and it's been really good. We've identified over about 109,000 voters that have moved out of state. So we, you know, have been working those lists really hard. One of the things that people don't realize, though, is that the National Voter Registration Act of 1993 that Congress passed prohibits states within 90 days of an election to work your voter file maintenance. So you can't remove anybody, can't place them on inactive, you know, all that sort of thing. So, you know, December the 5th, we quit working those inactive of those lists that we've identified. And so after the primary runoff, we'll get back to work, you know, in preparation for the November election.
I'll be back with more Alabama stories after this.
Are you enjoying 1819 News? If so, consider joining 1819 News as a member. As a nonprofit news organization, we depend on the support of Alabamians like you. Memberships start out as little as $5 a month, and you'll get access to exclusive content only offered to our members. You'll be supporting independent journalism done by people who cherish Alabama values. Become a member today by visiting 1819news.com and clicking Become a Member. That's 1819news.com and click Become a Member today.
A small plane crashed into a wooded area in Opelika on Sunday night. Amazingly, the pilot walked away from that wreckage unscathed. There were no other passengers on board the Cessna 172. The Federal Aviation Administration is going to investigate the cause of that crash. I'm Andrea Tice.
For more news affecting Alabamians, go to 1819news.com. And while you're there, subscribe to the daily newsletter.
This hour of News and Views is brought to you by our good friends at Cole Plumbing, 279-8919. Cole Plumbing is number one in the number two business. You don't have to dig a hole. They have proprietary pipelining technology. Ask them about their tankless water heaters. Remember, when you have trouble with your bowl, call on Cole.
Sometimes you need things done around your house or land that your lawnmower or weed eater just can't handle. That's when you call Prattville Farm Center. They bring their own crew and equipment and clear whatever you need. They say no job is too small. I've been going to Prattville Farm Center for years, and I like dealing with hometown folks. They get the job done right and get it done quickly. If you have land that needs clearing, call Randy at Prattville Farm Center on South Memorial Drive in Prattville. Call 365-5400.
The views and opinions of the following program are solely those of the host and other contributors. These do not necessarily represent those of Liberty Acquisitions 825, Blue Water Broadcasting, its management, staff, or any advertisers.
It's time for Montgomery's Conversational Radio Show. It's News and Views on News Talk 93.1 FM. To join the conversation, call 272-9228.
Final hour here on a very manic Monday, but I'm surviving. And as promised, right across the desk from me to discuss, well, the ongoing legislative session, we have State Senator, my State Senator, Will Barfoot here in the studio. How are you doing today, sir?
Pretty good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. So, just in a general sense, how would you say, because you've been through a few of these now, this year's legislative session is going?
Very hectic and productive, I think. You take any of the myriad of kind of the red meat Republican conservative issues, and alone by themselves in any one session, they would have been the topic of the session. And we've managed to accomplish several of those goals in 5-6 weeks now. So been very productive out of the first 17 days.
Now, one bill that you carried, at least it was high profile in the press, was this DEI bill that is now law. It's signed by the governor. Explain what this law now does and kind of how that process went.
Sure. So the bill addresses basically three different areas, the divisive concepts, and it lists out what divisive concepts are. I mean, that's a general term, but the bill itself lists those nine different divisive concepts. And it, I don't remember all of those word for word, but basically that, you know, a divisive concept would be that because of your race, sex, national origin, gender, religion, that you're inherently superior or inferior to anyone else, because of any of those, you know, race, sex, national origin, gender, ethnicity, moral compass is determined by any of that. So those kind of bullet points there are 9 or 10 divisive concepts that are laid out in there that the state of Alabama through the state agencies, K through 12 or higher education could not promote those divisive concepts. The second part of that bill was dealing with specifically diversity, equity, inclusion. Of course, you know, those words by themselves sound inviting and sound like something we should all be for. DEI, as it's commonly referenced throughout the state and throughout the nation, has become something quite different. It's a wedge that divides us, and we prohibit in this bill state taxpayer dollars from being used for any DEI-type office or program at the higher education level, state agency, or K through 12. And then finally, the bill itself, and there was a lot of discussion about what this bill does, and you know, the opposition was, you're just going to, you know, teachers won't be able to teach history, and we're not going to be able to address the sins of the past. And that bill in section, I think, 4 of the legislation specifically addressed what is not prohibited, and certainly the teaching of history in a historically accurate context was not prohibited. So I think it was a good bill. That there were a few little tweaks and changes along the way. I think, you know, when people put their eyes on it and you go, well, you didn't think about this. Oh, yeah, let's change this. Let's make this better. I've heard it said it's probably one of the better DEI divisive concepts type legislations that's out there throughout this country.
So. And from the response I've seen from, say, University of Alabama or Auburn University, it kind of makes clear that, yeah, we still actually want to treat everybody with respect and dignity. Sure. We're just not going to deal with these 9 concepts. And, you know, I've found plenty of interviews. There's one Glenn Lowry did where he talked to somebody who literally was a DEI bureaucrat. Right. And she started to realize, she thought it was diversity's great. She realized that, no, they are really pushing this oppressor-oppressed narrative, using it as kind of a bloody axe to hew through every root and branch of society. Yep. And she was wondering, what, can't we teach the sins of the past or the problems of the past through the lens of human dignity, not this collective guilt game we're playing?
100%. You know, Troy was an example of a university that did not, and evidently will not now have a DEI office. And their diversity among their student population was somewhere around 38%, I think, black students. And then if you look at all minorities, I think it was above 50%. So when you compare that to some of the other flagship universities in the state, that Troy had done a great job. Again, we should want individuals who are capable of learning, that want to be there. And that should not be based on whether or not they're short, tall, fat, black, white, young, old. It's you want the best and the brightest to come. So,
amen. Though I've learned that diversity, like, you, I don't know if you know the social scientist Robert Putnam. He's became famous for that book Bowling Alone, where he's talking about Americans aren't joining fraternal groups and they're literally bowling alone instead of joining, say, a bowling league, and that's across the board and all sorts of different aspects of life. He did a follow-up, I think this came out a couple years ago, where he wanted to investigate diversity. And he found that diversity had either no effect or a negative effect. It made people watch more TV and protest more.
Yeah.
And he said the only place it really works is when you say you join a church, so all of you are oriented to the mission of the church, or you join the military, so everybody's oriented to the mission of the military. That's when people, to your point, of different backgrounds really work together. But diversity for its own sake seems to, well, it doesn't really get us anything.
It doesn't. As a matter of fact, I've used this term before. It really is a wedge sometimes when you point out people's differences in an effort to bring them together. It has quite the opposite effect.
Right. And, well, it's good to see that we got this through. This is now law here in the great state of Alabama. Now, one bill or massive legislation that my bet was that it would not pass before everything got going is this big pull on gambling, the overhaul on gaming here in the state of Alabama. If I had to make a binary choice, I would probably go with the Senate's language. But where do you think this goes, if it goes anywhere?
So 105 members of the House, 35 members of the Senate, you got 140 different opinions on where, if at all, it goes from here. You're right, the House tackled the issue fairly early on, sent us a pretty expansive piece of legislation. Senate took a couple weeks, pared that down dramatically, and sent it back to the House. Believe they got that probably Tuesday of last week. What happens at this point in the House, I don't know that anybody knows. Obviously, that would be most likely up to the Speaker and the sponsors in the House. There's a couple of different options, given the fact that we did pare it down dramatically in the Senate, and that would be that the House could either vote to concur on the constitutional amendment, and I'm just kind of speaking about the constitutional amendment now, but concur on the constitutional amendment. That's one motion that they could entertain. They could vote to non-concur and go to conference, or they could vote to non-concur and the bill is dead. I don't think that third one is quite much of an option, but either concur or non-concur and go to conference. It's going to be interesting to see what happens then. Of course, in a conference committee, there are three House members and three senators who look at the bill, you know, make potential changes to that. And then that bill would go back to the House of origin. In this case, it would go back to the House if a conference committee does come to an agreement. It takes two members from each body to come to an agreement, go back to the House of origin. So the House would get an opportunity to vote up or down on it, or maybe even make another motion to go back to a conference committee. If the House concurred with what the conference committee did, then it would go to the Senate for us to have some input on it.
Now, is there enough time to do all that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it depends on when any of that happens, what happens and when it happens. I will tell you, at the Senate, I don't think there's much of an appetite to go much further to have any substantial changes from what we've done in the Senate.
Right.
I think any major changes, or even changes that may seem minor but have major implications on there, probably be met with less than 21 approval votes out of the Senate, which that's what it takes, three-fifths majority.
Now, who is driving the car on the Senate side? Who is really, because I know it was Rep. Blackshear and like the Speaker's office more on the House side, but who on the Senate side is really driving this car?
Well, certainly Senator Albritton, you know, is very supportive of gambling expansion for multiple reasons. I think he would probably say it a little bit different way than what I've said it, expansion and to capture that revenue and to regulate. And I think that's an important part of both bills. Had a very regulatory portion of that currently illegal gambling in the state of Alabama, misdemeanors, and it did make some of that felonies. And so there was a pretty harsh approach, maybe not harsh, but certainly more, you know, caused some problems for some folks who are engaging in illegal gambling that came out of both those versions. So I think he certainly is an advocate of what the House had done. There were several members in the Senate who would ever vote for that type of expansion of gambling. And, you know, he got pared down.
Now, could theoretically there just be a concurrence on just the amendment? And the enabling legislation is just, like, dead for the moment? Or the people could still vote on changing the Constitution, then it would be up to a future legislature to actually put some teeth into that.
It could, but, that causes lots of problems, right?
Right.
You know, if you have a constitutional amendment that, which, you know, I mean, the legislature cannot pass a gambling bill. We can only pass a constitutional amendment that gives the people of the state the right to vote on that. So there's some key language in that constitutional amendment. And certainly if a constitutional amendment passed without the enabling, the folks could vote on it. But I think there's potential problems with that happening.
Yeah, and we'll see where it goes. I'm worried gambling was going to kind of cannibalize the rest of the session, but it seems like, to your first point, a lot is getting done this session. I've got to hit a quick break, and we'll come back. Again, we're talking with State Senator Will Barfoot. More news and views after this.
Want to carry News Talk in your pocket? Download the News Talk 93.1 app from the App Store. Available on iPhone and Android. Never miss a moment. Download now.
This is former Alabama Supreme Court Justice Glenn Murdoch. Alabama is a great place to live and work and raise our families because Alabamians are a good people of faith and traditional values. But a huge gambling bill in Montgomery would change our culture forever. 10 massive casinos bringing more crime to our big cities and small towns, highly addictive cell phone betting, and the state selling the lie of lottery riches to the poor and most vulnerable. With all that's wrong in the world, this is no time to give up on our traditional values in Alabama. Call and ask your senator to be the leader you elected them to be. To stand strong and vote no on gambling and keep Alabama a great place to live and work and raise our families. Thank you.
Call your senator at 334-261-0800. 334-261-0800. 334-261-0800. Paid for by Eagle Forum, Alabama.
What's your biggest investment? More than likely, it's your home. So treat it that way when you hire a painting contractor. With PBS Painting, there are no gimmicks, no $99 specials. Just quality painting and someone who treats your home with the same respect that you do. At PBS Painting, we have been painting for years and look forward to many more years to come. With PBS Painting, the job gets prepped properly, whether it's cleaning, scraping, or priming. We always use quality products, which is a must for a quality paint job. So if you're looking for a painter that doesn't need upfront money and is on the job at all times, then please give me a call. Scott Bowers and PBS Painting, 294-5122. That's PBS Painting, 294-5122. Look at some of our work on Facebook at PBS Painting Montgomery.
For too long, Alabama's statewide news companies have shamed us for our conservative Christian values. Alabama deserves a news company that cherishes our culture, a company that isn't bought and paid for by the powers that be. 1819 News is that company. Run by Alabamians for Alabamians, 1819 News celebrates what is good and beautiful about our state while exposing those who work against our values in secret. Just go to 1819news.com to learn more. Subscribe to our newsletter. That's 1819news.com.
The Health and Wealth Show. The Health and Wealth Show. The show so nice, we said it twice. Weekday evenings at 6 on News Talk 93.1 WACV. The
Health. Make it up, son. Joke's over, hey?
Hi, this is Bo Goodson from the Goodson Group. Selling a home in the River region in this market takes some planning and preparation to be successful. Here are some steps to take to get your home sold fast. Remember the five P's. Prepare the home. Fresh coat of paint inside and out, and complete any repairs needed. Professionally clean the home. A deep cleaning of floors, cabinets, windows, and blinds will leave a great impression for future buyers. Provide a home warranty for the buyer to give the buyer peace of mind after the closing. Provide a closing cost allowance for the buyer to help them be able to afford your home. Price your home to sell, not sit. A comparative market analysis from a local realtor will demonstrate what other properties have sold for in your neighborhood. Well-priced homes sell faster with less hassle. Houses are selling fast and sellers are getting top dollar. For all the answers, call Bo Goodson at the Goodson Group, 221-2883 or 551-0225.
This hour of News and Views is brought to you by our good friends at Cole Plumbing, 279-8919. Cole Plumbing is number one in the number two business. You don't have to dig a hole. They have proprietary pipelining technology. Ask them about their tankless water heaters. Remember, when you have trouble with your bowl, call on Cole.
News and talk without the static. The River Region's most trusted voice. News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Clark.
Welcome back to News and Views in the afternoon, 272-9228. If you have a comment or question for our guest, State Senator Will Barfoot, talking the legislative session, how it's gone so far. Now, I don't know if this has come up in session, but it is a problem. Does it look like that the bond the state was able to get for prisons is really only going to cover one of the proposed prisons? Like, where are we at with this?
Yeah, not on those committees that address that, but I think that's true, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Cost, supply chains, gouging, you may call it. It looks like that the bond issue will cover one of those, and that's because not that we couldn't get the bond amount that we wanted, but the cost of those prisons has increased dramatically. We'll see. I mean, has been one of the pushes that Senator Albritton said, hey, you know, we've got infrastructure needs like with prisons that and mental health that we're going to have to make some decisions about what we're doing. Of course, we're in a federal lawsuit now that continues and about housing of inmates and treatment of inmates while they're in there. And I do think an extra prison and a different design probably helps alleviate some of that, and especially maybe in the court size. So
it's just like
because that was what federal money that was used. It's frustrating to see, okay, we're still kind of stuck, and we still have the feds breathing down our necks legally, yep. The DOJ, legally speaking.
Yep, that's true. You know, part of the push for that, and it seems rational to me, is that, you know, you have dormitory-style facilities now, probably most of them built in the 70s and the 80s, kind of outlived their usefulness. And when you've got 150 inmates and two prison guards working that room, it's pretty easy to figure out who controls that area. You know, inmates, you know, can get away with a lot of different things. They didn't get in there because they're, you know, choir boys. And so when you have inmates in there, it's pretty easy, I would suspect, for them to say to those two guards, listen, you know who's in control, and, you know, turn your head and you didn't see anything. And unfortunately, I'm sure that happens.
Now, one, I believe, also another that's now law the governor signed is dealing with the whole Carly Russell situation.
Yeah.
Did that come in front of y'all at Judiciary? Or?
It did. So I don't remember if the governor signed that last week or not. I'm not sure where it's at. But we did have that in the Senate Judiciary. Senator April Weaver had that bill. Forgot the House member that had it. Maybe, I don't remember.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of moving parts there. But we did pass that. Had the Senate, I believe, and certainly came out of Senate Judiciary, and that imposes some more strict punishment on folks who would call in a crime that like happened in that Carly Russell situation. So I think that's a needed change.
Well, and another change I think is needed, and I don't often use my weekly column space for 1819 News to be like, y'all do this. But I did one week, because I think it was right after Senator Tuberville's house was swatted in Auburn. And I very graciously, Philip Insler, who's my Democrat state rep here in my district, he took up increased penalties for swatting. Has that made it to y'all's side?
It did. So you're right. Representative Insler from right here in Montgomery had that bill passed the House, I think, in bipartisan effort, 102-0, 103-0, whatever that count was. Then made it to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I presided over that. We actually had that in committee last week, and I believe it was unanimous in Senate Judiciary Committee, so hopefully it'll get a hearing and some debate and discussion on the Senate floor within the next week or so.
Oh, let's hope. But, from where you're – I know you're on Judiciary, but from where you're – how are we doing financially? How's the state doing? You know, we just mentioned, well, we don't have enough for prisons, but – I'd imagine we're doing all right.
Yeah, so I don't sit on either one of the budgets. The budgets have continued to grow, both the education trust fund budget as well as the general fund, every year. Some of that has been maybe a faster growth, at least on paper, than it really is with the influx of federal dollars. I do think that we're going to have to – we better brace ourselves. I think Alabama's done a much better position in a better position now than other states maybe around us and certainly nationally have. Senator Chambliss had, and I forget the exact title of it, but several years ago, it was almost like a rolling reserve in the general fund that we have in the education budget. So we're not spending – we're the budgets are fairly conservative. In other words, just because you have it doesn't mean you need to budget and allocate that. And then some of the growth has been better than expected.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Because, when I look at the general fund, it is, compared to the ETF, fairly meager, though it's still a lot of money. And one, it seemed maybe it was just a fight in the media. But where should we build roads in this lovely state of ours? I know some want the West Alabama idea. I tend to be a little more partial to Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth. Let's make 65 wider. Where are you at on this?
Yeah, side? I'm not an engineer or traffic specialist, but I will tell you this. It seems to me reasonable that you put the roads where the most traffic is, right, to alleviate the most congestion, and certainly 65 qualifies for that. I've heard a lot of discussion about 65. I'd also say 85 could probably use some widening as well, so... those major corridors through the state. Not that the West Alabama project's not a worthwhile project,
sure.
But you know what traffic alleviations are. What's the impact it's going to have, and what's the dollar figure that we're committing to? And so I think that's something that certainly needs to be considered, and we'll see where that lands up. I know the governor's very supportive of the West Alabama corridor, but let's just hope we don't spend all the money in the piggy bank before we can accomplish something like Governor Ainsworth wants to do.
Again, folks, we're talking to State Senator Will Barfoot, and Yeah, and you're the chair of the Judiciary, Senate Judiciary Committee. So is there anything that maybe hasn't gotten publicity that's come across that y'all are really interested, changes y'all have made or issues y'all have tackled?
Well, great question. So I am currently sponsoring, just filed last week, a bill dealing with mental health and the probate courts throughout the state. In a nutshell, it does three or four different major things. Current law mandates are, if you're suffering from a mental illness, there's a petition that someone can file for involuntary commitment. Currently, the remedy for that, should the court find that you do need some mental health treatment, one of three things: either dismiss it, or continue it, or commit you to a facility to up to, I believe it's 120, 150 days. That's rarely used anymore on the commitment process or the inpatient, because we just don't have the bed space. A lot of times it's a continuance, and although it's not accurate to say, it's almost like probation. It's, hey, we find that you do suffer from a mental illness, that you may be a threat or harm to yourself or others, and we're going to make sure that over this 30, 60, 90, 120-day period, that you're going to be checking in with mental health professionals. They're going to get to gauge what's going on, making sure you're taking medication and all. So that's current law. Mm-hmm. Current law does not allow for a secondary diagnosis drug addiction. It's not okay. The technical term. This bill would say, hey, just if you have a mental illness as the primary diagnosis, but you also suffer from
substance abuse,
and that substance abuse is correlates with your mental health illnesses as a secondary function, that the probate court can look at that. That's one of the things it does. Secondly, is if you went to file a petition on somebody now in Montgomery County and they had left and gone to Autauga County, probate judge in Montgomery County has no authority over the sheriff's department, for instance, in Autauga County.
Right.
This would give the authority to for the probate judge in Montgomery County to issue that order to the Montgomery County sheriff, and then they could coordinate and work through Autauga County to go and pick you up to have that hearing. Mental health hearing. So a couple of good things there. There's also a piece of that puzzle where if you are, for instance, arrested for disorderly conduct, which may include, as an example, if I went out in the middle of the road and took off my clothes and started yelling, I think people would think that'd be disorderly.
Just a bit.
Once that law enforcement officer arrests me for that and places me in custody and takes me to the local jail, the probate courts are kind of without authority at this point to assess that. So this would give the probate judge in each county the ability, if it's a misdemeanor or a violation of a municipal ordinance, to ask the district or municipal court for the authority to take you into custody, transfer you that jurisdiction over to the probate court to have you seen about. So a couple of things I think that are worthwhile, and we'll see where that goes.
Now, I'm asking you this every time you come in here, but I think it's one of those evergreen issues. Just take your temperature on it. From a general perspective, where do you see Alabama's court system? Are we still backed up, bloated, or are we getting a little more efficient? How's it going?
A hodgepodge. Backed up for sure. No question about that. In Montgomery, and these may not be completely accurate numbers, but you'll get the picture, somewhere close to 300 either murder or capital murder cases that are there. We've got 9 judges in Montgomery. They do a very good job by and large. But, you know, a murder case, especially a capital murder case, can be a week or sometimes a 2-week long trial.
Right.
You know, we're backed up, not just in Montgomery, but around the state. There is a bill right now that would allow for retired judges to come back and to hear cases on a limited basis for a limited amount of time throughout the year. That was Representative Jim Hill's bill, and we just passed that out of the Senate Judiciary last week. So that's something that may have some at least small impact on trying to get some cases moving.
Yeah, and I actually went through jury duty. I went through the whole process until they put me on the bubble. And then I was like, guys, I got to interview. Like, can we figure something out here? And I was able to get out of it. But I did see Judge Anderson in action. And he laid out how much the backlog is with the criminal cases, but also the civil cases are very much backlogged. And I kind of feel for the judges because, you know, it's one thing being a juror or a potential juror. Seeing how that system works, it's like this does take a lot of time. You're working with a lot of different types of people. And, again, I'm not somebody who usually says give the government more money, but I think expanding our judiciary is probably continues to be an important idea.
No question is, you know, it is a co-equal branch of government that we inadequately fund on a lot of times. So I had the pleasure, and I say that honestly, of serving on two different juries before. One when I was in my early to mid-20s on a trafficking case, and so it was a criminal case, and the other one, 2006 or so, on a civil case. It's amazing what goes on in those jury rooms. Every lawyer should be required to, you know, sit through one of those jury trials. So.
Or at least watch, what's the movie, 12 Angry Men?
12 Angry Men, that's it, yeah.
Still a fantastic movie. Yeah, I've been going and working with all the classics here for a lot with this brand new TV I just got from Cohen's, and it's like 85-inch. It was a child wish fulfillment
85-inch
thing.
85-inch TV.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Cohen's is the place to go, though.
Yeah, they are. Michael's a great guy over there. But, yeah, so I kind of back up here and do more general. Some ideas that I know, especially the conservative faithful, would like to see happen, but I've not heard a lot about it, so I suspect just, you know, seeing what you've heard. With the state health officer, and I'm not saying this to pick on Scott Harris necessarily. Others can do that if they like. But I think it is a good idea to have a little more electoral oversight for some of these professional bureaucrats. Have you heard anything about this?
Yeah, there's Senator Gavan out of Huntsville has a bill dealing with that, and I'm not sure the mechanics of that at this point. It will go through the health committee. Senator Melson also, who chairs that committee, also has a bill. Haven't read either one of them yet. I'm not on that committee, so we'll see what comes out of there. I do 100% agree, and this is not to beat up on Dr. Harris, who I suspect probably for what he was tasked to do did his job, right? And probably did a good job overall, you know. The problem is to your point, is that that individual or that position is not accountable to the people, right? And so we need to have a mechanism in place, at least going forward, where that position is maybe a cabinet-level position or is answerable directly to the governor. And as you know, and I forget the statute, but from 1940-something, 1950-something is how that was set up originally, to where, you know, the state health officer basically has unfettered authority and power to do what we saw around the country and in some cases here in Alabama. And that's unconscionable. We need to have, listen, if you're going to make a decision, you need to be answerable to the people. Either by, you know, elected officials who then in turn, you know, have a say-so on, you know, the responsibility and the job duties that you're doing, or certainly at least maybe to the people themselves.
Now, one of the big highlights of this session, I think, looking back at it, I hope the program expands, is the passage of school choice. And I know, I think, what is it, Senator Orr really helped shepherd that through. But did you vote for it? What did you think of that?
Voted for it. So let me rewind a couple of years. So Senator Marsh in 2022, I guess his last year there, had a school choice bill. He did not run again. Senator Stutz kind of picked up the mantle last year, had the Price Act, was, you know, the acronym. Was the Price Act. And then this year, the governor kind of helped weigh in on that, obviously, and the two education budget chairs were the sponsors, Senator Orr in the Senate and then Representative Garrett in the House. And I'm a big supporter, signed off on that, voted for it. I will tell you this, though, while that is a piece of the puzzle, that is not the silver bullet. And the reason I say that is because that bill allows parents to choose which school they're going to go to at the first 2 years. I think it's there's a floor of $100 million that can be spent on that. We'll see how much is actually used. There is a cap, though, and I forget, I think it's a family of four, it's 300-something percent times the poverty level. Maybe it's 400% times the poverty level for the first 2 years. Then after that, it's open up to everybody. if there had been a change, that change I would have wanted would have been it was open to everybody the first year, not wait till 3 years in.
Right.
But it's a good compromise. But let me tell you why that's not the silver bullet, because it requires parents to understand about what options are. It requires action on behalf of parents to make those choices that are beneficial for their children. So, for instance, you may have a school system where parents are not engaged, don't understand or know how to accomplish the goal of getting their children out of a school system into another one, or quite honestly, some parents maybe just don't care,
yep.
Right? So it is not the silver bullet. There's a lot of work to be done. We'll look at school districts, I think, in the future that are underperforming and take a closer look at them once the dust settles on the kids that are able to use this CHOOSE program.
So the $100 million is a floor, or is it like you can't spend more than $100 million?
No, you can spend more than $100 million. There's at least the legislative body can allocate it, has to allocate at least $100 million to that.
Oh, wow, okay. So, but that $100 million, it's a lot of money, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of the ETF.
It is, and you're talking about the state portion of those tax dollars, which is somewhere around $7,000 per student. So local monies and federal monies still stay in the school district where that child would have been or is zoned for. There's some pushback from local schools around the state, and some of that was, well, you're taking the kid, but... Yes, that's true, but you're still getting financial resources from the federal government and local tax base to educate a child that you don't have that responsibility for anymore. So, I don't think there's the negative impact that some would say it's going to have, and I don't think it's a silver bullet that cures all the problems.
Again, folks, we've been talking to State Senator Will Barfoot. You know, when I look at the state big picture, I guess we can get out of here with this. I bring this up with a lot of, whether it's a city councilman or you represent this area in the state Senate, how important it is to have a brand new senator who lives here in Montgomery. And I'm bringing this up because I'm thinking about, well, the bad that we saw in the news headlines with the Biden administration taking Space Command out of Huntsville. But part of me is also like, why is it all just going to Hunt Vegas? I know, Shelby and all sorts. Redstone is a major nerve center of the federal government. I get it. Blue Origin's building rockets up there. But how do we get some of that here? If we're going to take federal money, where are we going to see it in Montgomery? Though I guess we have Maxwell, but where I'm coming from.
Yeah, so, it's been a big push here in the last couple of years to make sure that Montgomery does, in fact, get a fair share of the resources. There are projects that have come up that, it's almost like there's a piece of the pie, right? And this happens in Washington, D.C. all the time. And if the rules are that this money is going to be spent, right, maybe I'm against spending it, but if it's going to get spent, we certainly want some of that to come back to the River Region.
Right.
And I think our delegation works fairly well together to try to accomplish those goals. When you think about the power structure in the House and the Senate, a lot of that is in North Alabama. That's where most of the population is, so therefore more senators and more House members from those areas. So it's a big change from the Constitution of 1901, where for a long period of time you had South Alabama that was kind of the big guy in the room and got to make those decisions, and that population-based change has created new dynamics in the legislature.
Well, and a lot of those guys from in the northern part of the state got to spend at least some time down here in Montgomery, a few parts of the year, so they might as well disperse the place up a little bit.
Well, you think, in reference to the State House, that building, I think, was built in the 60s, Highway Department building. The legislature moved from the Capitol over there in the 80s. I drive a 2016 truck. Before that, and that's, I've only had that for about 3 or 4 years. Before that, I drove a 2003 pickup truck. And the goal of a truck or a building or anything else should be, in my opinion, I'm not an aesthetics person, it should be, is it functional? Does it do what it's intended to do? And then you look at whether or not what the cost is to maintain and to make sure that continues to do what it's supposed to do. in the case of a vehicle to get you to point A or point B, from point A to point B. And if it starts costing you more to do that, to accomplish that goal, then maybe you need to look at other options. With the State House, I think it would be great and nice to have one. Obviously, the construction is going on in the back. I do note, though, that I don't remember a whole lot of jumping up and down when we remodeled the Capitol, the executive branch here back in the 80s or 90s. I certainly don't remember any controversy when the Supreme Court built a new building, which they needed and has been put to good use. So I'm hopeful that the driving force behind the legislative new State House is going to be and has been, especially when COVID was in, is that you were limited to the number of people who were there. You know, that ADA compliance is horrific. If you ever got sued, there was a gentleman that came from Tennessee to testify last week, and he thought that the allergies were giving him problem. And the joke around the State House was, it's not the allergies, it's the mold.
The
here.
Mold, yeah.
You've been down there, and you've seen some of the pictures about some of the floors and rooms that are basically uninhabitable. So there's a cost associated with that.
It does feel old school, but now y'all can't blame the mold. Neurological issues. We made the wrong decisions.
That's right.
And is it true, the rumor, that each new office is going to have like a fully stocked mini bar?
Oh, gosh, I hadn't heard that one. But, for the mini bar, doesn't bother me. I mean, that's not the push for me. You look at my waistline, it's like, let's have a snack bar.
Yeah, there you go. I'm not a sweet tooth guy, though. Nah. Give me a plate of bacon cheese fries, and I'll eat that all day, every day.
Yep.
I do appreciate the time. I think we have one call in here. Yeah. Let's see. You're on the air. State Senator Will Barfoot here with us.
Will Barfoot, this is Rich. because I painted your house for Norman Swimmer.
The Whistler.
Yes, sir. Well put it. I'm still whistling. By the way, Joey, I can hear myself whistling while I'm on hold a little bit every now and then. It tickles me. But here's a question for you about the infrastructure. I know you're not on those committees and all that, but the Pike Road interchange, I guess, is never going to get finished to the Troy Highway.
A lot of federal money involved in that, and I think these major projects like that, or like the bridge down in Mobile, the amount of federal money that's involved, and without that federal money, it's probably not going to happen, at least in our lifetime. So,
does that include the loading new container port here in Montgomery?
No, that is, I think, is currently underway. And I haven't been out there to see that. I'm supportive of that, at least as I understand it. I mean, that enables, goods and from the port up and from Hyundai and other areas around the state down to the bay. And, of course, back in 2018 or so, when the Rebuild Alabama project gas tax increase was passed, that was part of that equation, was to deepen the Mobile port, and I think that part of it for sure was a good use of the taxpayer dollars, I believe.
Is that container port going to be north or south of downtown?
It is going to be south around Hope Hole area, I believe, okay. And specifically where, I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay, so southeast of Maxwell Air Force Base.
Certainly south, maybe southwest. I'm trying to think of the map.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds great. It's a good thing for Montgomery, and I'm glad to see the river being used again for the first time in, 150 years?
Yeah.
So it'll be a great asset. Thank you. Good to talk to you, bud.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Need some help.
Hey, thank you much.
Appreciate it. Right, be careful tickling yourself, especially in public. 272-9228. I'm going to let you get out of here. I really do appreciate the time.
Always enjoy it.
And I appreciate the job you do
up there as well.
And I'll say, folks, I like House members at the state or federal level. I like senators the best, though.
Well, thank you.
There's something about that.
It's rarely fun, but sometimes it is meaningful. And, there's not every day that I can say that I've had an opportunity to change something for the better. But those few occasions that you get an opportunity to stop something or to make a significant change on something, You gotta smile about those times, because there's lots of other times that you can't.
So. Yes, sir. On the margins. Yep. It's always on the margins. But I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
More news and views after this.
He may not know whether he's coming or going, but whether you're going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings, 6 till 9, and afternoons, 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Rich Thomas Weather, brought to you by H&H Carpets, where you will find a complete line of Mohawk carpet with exceptionally clean, smart strand fiber. It's always available and ready to be installed. H&H Carpets, across from Walmart on the Atlanta Highway.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. We've got a storm system fast approaching. The winds are picking up ahead of it, and wind advisory is in effect tonight with winds gusting as high as 35 miles per hour. We're dry through the evening hours, but scattered showers developing in the overnight hours, low 62. Showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. Locally heavy downpours at times, high 71. Wednesday's high 73. We'll be in the upper 60s on Thursday, mostly sunny, and then warmer by the weekend. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
Web Bobo with Capital Tractor. Make this spring your most productive yet with our package deal on Kubota's L2501 DT tractor with front loader, 5-foot cutter, and box blade, and 20-foot trailer at special spring savings. Kubota and Capital Tractor, Montgomery, Brundage, and Greenville.
At Guardian Credit Union, we believe that banking should be personal, just like the relationships we build with members. Imagine a place where you're not just a credit score, but a valued part of our community. At Guardian, our dedicated team takes the time to listen, understand, and tailor financial solutions that fit your unique needs. From buying a car to saving for college and even starting a small business, we've got you covered. Come experience the Guardian difference and let's achieve your financial goals together. Guardian Credit Union, where you belong. Federally insured by NCUA.
Mike Costanza with Chappie's Deli.
And Jeff Maranko with Chappie's Deli.
One of the reasons Chappie's Deli has been around for over 32 years is Blue Water Broadcasting.
Yes, it is, and we have the perfect faces for radio.
We sure do. And if you have a perfect face for radio, call Blue Water.
Now you can add the power of digital advertising to the number one reach of radio. Let Blue Water's 20 years of local advertising and marketing success show you how. Grow your business with a complete suite of digital solutions combined with the reach of the most listen to radio group in the River Region. Call us or go to BlueWaterBroadcasting.com to find out how we can increase your return on investment. Blue Water Broadcasting, local folks helping local business.
Don't you love the feeling of coming home to a clean house? Let Southern Bells Cleaning Service get your home in order. Families in the River Region trust Southern Bells because they know Callan and Jesse will show up on time and believe in cleaning the old-fashioned way. They bring all their own supplies and specialize in full-service, residential, commercial, vacant properties, and construction cleanup. Estimates are always free. Call Southern Bells today at 546-0715 or follow them on Facebook at Southern Bells Cleaning River Region.
This hour of News and Views is brought to you by our good friends at Cole Plumbing, 279-8919. Cole Plumbing is number one in the number two business. You don't have to dig a hole. They have proprietary pipelining technology. Ask them about their tankless water heaters. Remember, when you have trouble with your bowl, call on Cole.
The River Region's first and only News Talk station on FM. Live, local talk. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Welcome back. Final moments of News and Views in the afternoon. 272-9228. Been flying solo all day today, and I have to admit, I miss Eddie. I miss that fellow. I wonder what he's up to today. I think he's actually going to be out tomorrow. He told me he was busy, and I tend to believe him. And by the way, thank you for all the love on the X platform. This humble little local talk radio show, we started with like 20 people watching us, if that. Now over 200 folks on the X platform watching us. I really appreciate all the love. And of course, you can go to X Twitter, at the Joey Clark. Follow me there. Or you can go to YouTube, Joey Clark Live, and watch that way. And we're supposed to be talking to Ray Balls of Prattville Carpet. So I'm just going to do this live here. Y'all get to see how our phone system works. See if he picks up.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Ray, we're actually on the air because I'm flying solo, and so I just called you up direct. How you doing today?
I'm great. We are actually in Reno or outside somewhere outside of Reno in a chocolate factory. Let me walk outside.
A chocolate factory?
Yeah, same old stop at a chocolate factory. Oh,
that's not a bad idea. I just watched that new Wonka movie. It's pretty damn good.
If you're like 15, when you're 51, you can't do that anymore.
Fair enough. So you're out of town. Is the store in good hands? Is Prattville Carpet going to be all right?
The store is in great hands. Yeah. All the guys are working. Everything's going good. I checked in on three times today. And it seems like everybody's flowing really well. We still have some really good buys all that LVP I bought at the show. We got a pallet left of that. It's sitting inside the showroom. So if you need an estimate, call us today at 285-8117. We'll come out and get that pre-measure just like that.
Again, that number, 285-8117, and be sure to tell them that you heard Ray here on the radio with that Joey fella, and best of luck touring the chocolate factory.
Well, yesterday we went looking for gold and busted the tire, so we spent the whole day under the truck trying to change the tire on the F-250. If you didn't have to change the tire on the F-250, it's not the funnest thing to do out in the middle of a blizzard. We were a little in the blizzard. Change the tire.
Yeah, imagine that's you need a pretty heavy duty jack to get one of those big old tires off the
I told my buddy, I said, you know, the only thing we're going to remember this vacation 10 years from now is them.
Oh, well, but then you'll look back and laugh. Oh, I remember how crazy we were.
It's a good time. But yeah, if y'all need anything, call the store 285-8117.
Well, thank you, Ray. Have a good rest of your trip.
Y'all see.
And on that note, we got about 2 shopping minutes left. Is anything broken in the news? Anything at all? Let's check in. Greg Vidal and Happy Hour coming up here soon. Kevin O'Leary continuing to beat the drum. Foreign investors are asking difficult questions about New York and Letitia James. Yeah, they should. This is the sort of crap you see in communist regimes. You know, they can do worse. This idea that no, private players in the market aren't allowed to make their own deals. We, the government, know better. Screw what the market valuation is, what actual people voluntarily engaging with one another agreed on based on their preferences. We, the government, know better. And of course, it's funny how they decided to know better on that particular guy's deals. And like so many of these cases, it just doesn't pass the smell test. But as we get closer to election day, folks, it is going to get nastier and nastier, sillier and sillier. And we'll be here for it. Again, Joey Clark live on YouTube. Like and subscribe, or on Twitter on the X platform at the Joey Clark. Give us a follow there, because these next few months, well, I have a feeling we're going to see things that we did not expect. Or I have a feeling the chessboard is not yet even set up. We're not even playing the game just yet. And who knows who Trump picks to be his VP? Who knows if Trump even makes it to Election Day? Who knows? Will Joe Biden even be the candidate? So many questions. I don't have the answers, nor the time, or the patience, honestly, at this point in the day to try to answer them myself. But y'all stay tuned for Greg Vidal and Happy Hour. Greg and Rosie, well, they're next. Ta-ta.
From the Riverside Chevrolet Master Control Center, this is WACV Cusada, News Talk 93.1 FM. When it's Chevy, it's Riverside.
With SRN News, I'm Jason Walker. United Nations Security Council.